This is Gideon Rothstein with a response a day for the 13th of Sivan. This is a response from the Noda Behuda. Noda Behuda was a giant of his generation in the mid to late 1700s. This tshuva is from the 13th of Sivan and Tuf Kuf Lamed Dalet, which is translates into 1774. The simple way to translate, this is something to, worth knowing, the simple way to translate the Hebrew calendar, the Jewish calendar, into the English calendar, is that the change of centuries happens at the 40 year in the English century. So the year Tuf Kuf, which is really 5,000 Tuf Kuf, 5,500, is from 1240, that's when the millennium changed. So 1240 is the new millennium. So 500 more would be 1740, and then Lamed Dalet is 74. Of course, you have to always remember that Tishrei, Cheshvan, and Kislev, and sometimes Tevet, might be in the previous year because we switch the year around September, October time in their calendar, but it basically works. So, for the 13th of Sivan, Tuf Kuf Lamed Dalet 1774, the Noda of Yehuda, Rabbi Chizkiah Landau, was asked about the following situation. There was a certain woman about whom rumors had gone out that she had an affair. There was a rumor she had an affair. Now, the rumors, important to know from the start, but it's going to come up again, the rumors were false. But there were rumors that she had an affair. Her husband decided she had an affair. He began to abuse her. There is nothing in this tshuva that implies that it was okay to do so. These are just the facts of the situation, and then we're going to have to grapple with the facts. So he's beating her. And she asks him, why are you beating me? What's going on? Right? And he says that it's because of the terrible thing that she did. She had an affair. She cheated on him. And he's not going to rest until he eventually kills her. That's what he says to her in the case. She goes to a neighbor, and she's all upset about this. You know what she's going to do? Her husband's beating her, and she fears for her life. The neighbor says, you know what? Tell him it's true. Tell him you had the affair. He'll divorce you without a ketubah, meaning you won't get any money out of it, and you'll be done with him, though. You'll at least live. So that's what she does. She go, and the next time the husband started to beat her, she admitted it, right? She admitted that she had the affair, so the husband stops beating her, because what's it admitted? Meaning, I think the story is supposed to be that the husband wasn't yet confident enough to divorce her, or he thought it would cost him money to divorce her. So once she admitted it, she wasn't going to pay the money. He goes to the local rabbi, the local Moreh HaRa, the local person who can rule on these issues. He says he wants to divorce his wife. And he doesn't say she admitted it. He just says he heard the rumor. So the rabbi, in this case, investigating somewhat appropriately, checks, goes to the people who are spreading the rumor, and he says, I'm going to make you take an oath, and take an oath that it's true. And they admit that they were lying, that they did it because they didn't like the woman, they wanted to get her in trouble, and so the moreh, the rabbi, sends them away. He calls the husband back. He says, listen, I checked in with them. They admit they were lying. She didn't have the affair. You're not getting divorced. After a while, the husband starts beating her again. He starts beating her again, I guess, because he didn't really believe it, and he's all upset now, and he doesn't know what to do, and he's stuck, so he's beating her. That's not an excuse. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. She now goes to the rabbi. She says, no, I had an affair, and I want to get divorced. And so the rabbi comes, and he asks the husband, notice, he doesn't say, you have to get divorced. He asks the husband, do you believe the wife? Because there are situations in halacha where if the man doesn't believe her, because halacha also always worried that a woman might say this if she had just decided she wanted out of the marriage, or she had decided that there was somebody out there she was hoping to marry, even though she has not yet had an affair with that person, but she was hoping to marry, and therefore she says, I had an affair. So it wasn't, unless there was proof of it, you didn't just take her word for it. So the rabbi says to the husband, do you believe her? Husband says, yes, I believe her. So they get divorced. She doesn't get a ketubah. She doesn't get any monetary payment because that's what she forfeited. She goes to her father's house. The husband finds out about the conversation she had with the neighbor where they agreed that she had to admit it just to get away from him because he was beating her and that it wasn't true. And now the husband feels terrible. It's an odd case. I don't know what people were like in the mid to late 1700s, but it's an odd situation because the way it's put here, the way it's phrased here, the husband's all upset about the wife of his youth and they have two little kids and he wants to get married again. And she also feels bad, and she also wants to get married again, which is an odd thing to me, because I can't imagine that if he beat her for so long, forget what the reason was, but he beat her for so long, and he threatened to kill her, that she had to get away from the marriage, that she would go back to him. To me, it's really very strange, but that's what it is. It is what it is. So the question is, can they? Because after all, she's admitted to having an affair. And her admitting having an affair and him having divorced her for having an affair means they really can't get back together. Meaning, if she had actually had an affair, they could not get back together, halakhically. If a wife has an affair, halakhically, she's not allowed to stay married to her original husband, and she's not allowed to marry the man she had the affair with. But she is trying to say, she's claiming that she didn't mean it. And she's giving, it's called in halakha, an amatla. She's giving an explanation for why it was she would have said that, meaning ordinarily when people just say, well, I was lying before, we don't believe them because we don't know what to believe. So once somebody says something, that becomes their statement of record and they can't go back on it. But if they have an amatla, if they have a valid explanation for why they would have said that before, even though it wasn't true, so then you might think that they'd be able to get back. So this rabbi is writing the note of Yehuda now to try to find out if they can put them back together. And he had suggested, the rabbi, that there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that if a woman says, I had an affair, and then she says, I didn't, and she gives an explanation for it, he remembered a Ramah that says that we can believe her. None of you said, well, that you're misremembering, because that Ramah was not... was not talking about where they'd already gotten divorced. I was talking about where they hadn't yet gotten divorced. So if they've already gotten divorced, that's more of a problem, because an amatla usually only takes effect until they act upon the idea. But if one acts upon whatever the statement was, then it's much harder and it's less clear that an amatla can work. So the Note of Yehuda says, actually he thinks a dispute or a difference of opinion between the Taz and the Shach, because there are a couple of examples in halacha of an amatla. One example is if you have a shochet, if you have a slaughterer, a meat slaughterer, so usually what happens is they're slaughtering very quickly, they're in a rhythm, and so if something goes wrong with one, they would put a mark on the head of that animal. And then when the animal came to be processed further for eating, you'd see the mark and you know that something went wrong with it. So if a shochet, if a slaughterer, put a mark on the head of a certain sheep and then later wants to say, no, it was actually kosher, so that's the question of whether an amatla can work. And so the Taz had wondered about that, because there's a halacha later in Shulchan Aruch about a woman. It used to be that women had certain specific garments they wore when they were nidot, when they were menstruating and they had to separate from their husband. So they had these garments that they wore. I think it might have been undergarments they wore so that other women would see it, but not men. And there, the Shulchan Aruch says that if she later explains why it was she was wearing those garments, the amatla doesn't work because she did an action. So the Taz is bothered by the fact that in the case of the sign on the head of the sheep, if the shochet, if the slaughterer, gives an explanation, then we expect the explanation and say the animal can still be considered kosher. Whereas with the woman, if she claims now, I'm not really a nida, I wasn't really menstruating, and therefore I should be able to still live with my husband right now at this time of the month because nothing's going on, but she wore the clothing, there we say no. So the Rashba says in the name of the Ramban, the difference is that when you do a ma'aseh, and her ma'aseh, her action was the wearing of the begadim, that creates a problem. And therefore she can't go back on it with an amatla, and that would seem to say, therefore, that when it comes to our case, where they did an action, the action being that she actually got divorced, she allowed herself to be divorced without a ketubah, it should be that there's no, an amatla, an excuse, an explanation that comes later, shouldn't work. The Shach, however, said it's different, because in that case, in the Nida woman, the woman who wore the special clothing, the Shach says that her explanation that comes later doesn't explain why she should have done that action. Since there's no explanation for why she did the action, she doesn't really have an amatla. But if the amatla were to cover why she did the action as well, so then there would seem to be acceptable. There, that would seem to be, the amatla would be believable according to the Shach, and then that would mean that in our case, since her amatla is, she wanted to get away from a man who was threatening to kill her, then the action that she did fully fits in with that, and therefore the amatla, the explanation that it's really a lie and that she didn't mean, that she there was no truth in what she had said, should work and should be valid, and therefore we should believe her that she never actually had an affair in that situation, according to the Shach. So that would be the debate, that would be the why it's a dispute between the Taz and the Shach, depending on how we paskin, that would be how it would work. Another possibility that the Nota Bute raises is that the cases in the Shulchan Aruch, the other two previous cases of the Amata with an action, in those cases, the action itself shows the very thing they were claiming. In other words, if the slaughterer, or the ritual slaughterer, put the sign on the head of the sheep, that's what was generally done to prove that this sheep was a treifa, that something went wrong in the shechita, and therefore it's not a kosher valid. It's not a kosher sheep. Sheep can be eaten. So too with the woman wearing the garments, the wearing of the garment itself fortifies the idea that she is now currently an idas. In those cases, the complication of using her excuse to explain why she did an action, the problem there is the action itself was a validation of the claim she was making. But in getting divorced without a ketubah, that's not necessarily the validation of her claim. It's the consequence of her claim, and she's following through on it, but it's not actually a validation of her claim. Now, that's interesting because I'll come back to the divorce in a second, but that would suggest that if, for the Nota Bihuda at least, if the woman who wore the clothing only because somebody who had heard her say that she was a Nida says, well, then wear the clothing, then you could say the same thing. That's her following through. It's not her support. It's her following, not proving it. It's her following through on her claim because she was forced into it. Same thing with the slaughterer. Let's say the slaughterer is there with a bunch of friends. And he says, oh, that one went wrong. And they say, great, put the mark on the head. So that's what the Nota Bihuda is trying to say. Meaning if the person puts the mark on the head himself, the slaughterer, or the woman wears the big day nida herself, so that's an action that is supporting her claim. But if the action isn't supporting the claim, so in those cases, the action would just be a response to other people daring them or something like that. Here, too, in the divorce case, she's not getting divorced to support her claim. It's that once she's claimed that, that's the follow-through on it. But there's other reasons why women get divorced. So, for example, let's say she said that she had had an affair. Now, in our case, we say it's because he was beating her. But the Nota Bihuda says, but there are women who also just don't like the marriage, and therefore they want to get divorced. So if a woman did that, the divorce would also be the same way. Or he says, or maybe she wants to marry somebody else. So in those cases, they get divorced as well. Interesting, he calls them nashim tsnuot, and what by tsnuot, which ordinarily means modest and chaste, what he really means is just they haven't had an affair. They're not women who have actually violated the Torah in terms of having an affair, and they would act the same way. So therefore, in this case, the action doesn't prove anything about what actually occurred, and that would be a reason why the amatla should have better chance to work. But even with all of that, he thinks that in this case, he doesn't think we can follow the amatla for the following reason. Because in a case closer to our situation, Nota Bihuda says, even though I see all of this discussion, he says, "Lo asim ayin la'achronim rak l'divrei harishonim." I'm not going to pay attention to the achronim. I'm going to look at the rishonim, meaning I'm going to look back at more original sources. He says there's a different dispute between the Ravid and the Magid Mishnah. The Rambam paskins in Hilchot Yisurei Bia, in the laws of people with whom it's prohibited to have relations, the Rambam talks about the wife of a kohen. The wife of a kohen is in a different situation because if she has an affair, certainly, but in her case, even if the affair is against her will, meaning basically she's raped. So if she's raped, unfortunately and sadly for the couple, they can't stay together. That's a special level that applies to the Kedusha of a Kohen, which is a different discussion for a different time. But part of being a Kohen is that the sexual ethic around the Kohen's marriages has to be so at such a high level that even if there's no fault, meaning nobody claims there's any fault of hers in her being raped, even if there's no fault, the fact that she has had relations with somebody else means she can't stay married to her husband. It's a sad situation, and it's a sad part of being a Kohen, a difficult part of living a life at that level of sanctity, but different discussion. But let's say a woman comes, so this is the halakha of Rambam Paskins. A woman comes to her husband, the Kohen, and says, I was raped. He doesn't have to believe her. If he doesn't believe her, they can stay married. So if they can stay married, that's fine. But the Rambam says, but after he passes away, should he pass away, she can't marry any other Kohen. Why can't she marry any other Kohen? She can't marry any other Kohen because she has now agreed or said that she had a coerced affair, coerced being unimportant in terms of a Kohen. She had had an affair, and since she had an affair, she's not allowed to marry any other Kohanim. That's the way the Rambam ruled. The Ravid there wrote, it's a good idea, it's a davar chokhma, it is a wise thought, but I think it's not fully true, the Ravid says, because if she, after the husband passes away, she says, I didn't really mean that, it didn't really happen, I only said it so that he would divorce me, I just didn't like him, I wanted to get out of the marriage, then why wouldn't we believe her? Why wouldn't that amatla work, basically? Because after all, she said it, it didn't have any halakhic impact, in other words, she stayed married to her husband, and therefore it doesn't, what standing is attached? The Ravid's claim seems to be that if she makes a claim, and we don't accept it lahalacha, and then later she gives an explanation for it, that should not be a claim that binds her anymore. It shouldn't be that she, the phrase in halacha is, shavya la'atzma lanafsha chaticha de isura, she made herself prohibited. But if she didn't ever validly do so, and then she gives an explanation for why it wasn't true, the rabbi is unsure as to why that's not true. So, he gives another example of it. So, for example, if a woman says to us, I am married, and then afterwards she says, no, I'm not married. And she gives an explanation, the explanation being something like, so-and-so was pressuring me to marry him and I wanted to get rid of him, so I said I was married. She's believed, right? So here too, especially if with the first husband they had this big fight and then she said to him, I was raped. So that's a very good amatla, that's a very good explanation. Why wouldn't believe her? And so that's what the Ravid said. The Ravid's position is that the amatla should work in that situation. But the Magid Mishnah, a commentary on the Rambam, disagreed. Magid Mishnah points out that, in fact, her words do have halakhic ramifications because, forgetting the marriage issue, if her husband passes away, and then that she is no longer allowed to eat truma. The reason she's not allowed to eat truma is that her saying that she had an affair made her, other than for this husband who's not required to believe her, made her not appropriate or acceptable to a kohen, and that means she can't eat a truma anymore, and therefore the Magid Mishnah held that what she said did have halakhic impact, and since it had halakhic impact in terms of truma, it should have halakhic impact in terms of marrying other kohanim, and therefore her amatla, her explanation, should not be able to work, and therefore it shouldn't take effect. So, what does it have to do with our situation? Here too, you'd have that question of the amatla working or not. According to the Ravid, the amatla should be valid because after all, the husband wasn't forced to divorce her because he was allowed to not believe her if he wanted to. So even though he believed her, it shouldn't be relevant because the Ravid would say that that her amatla, her explanation, should work and therefore it should be okay. I apologize, I got that a little bit wrong. Actually, the note is holding, based on other achronim, and I'll do it very briefly, that even the rabbi here would agree that the amatla shouldn't work, that the explanation shouldn't work, and that's because here her words did have an effect. What was the effect that her words had? She got divorced without getting her ketubah, without getting her financial payment, so she accepted upon herself the law, the financial loss, but that means that her words were now given halakhic impact. And the rabbi's whole claim was that her amatla, her explanation, should be believed because, after all, until the husband died, her words had not had any effect, and by virtue of them not having an effect, that's what seems to leave room for the amatla, according to the Ravid, which would mean that in our situation, where she has lost her ketubah or forfeited her ketubah willingly, doesn't matter, but it still means that her words have had that effect, and therefore, it would seem that the amatla should not be allowed to be taken into account in the situation, and her explanation that she didn't really have the affair, she was only saying it to get away from a man who was beating her, should not have halakhic impact, because halakhically, once somebody's made a claim and it's had impact, it seems like we don't allow for an amatla for an explanation. Nonetheless, the Naoni Yehuda would like to find a way to let this woman get married to her husband again, because that's what both parties want, and his instinct, he says, V'amnam chatarti, I dug deeply, try to find a way to find a heter for this woman. So until now he said that her matla shouldn't work. Just the fact that she comes to court and says, no, I didn't really mean it, and I was only doing it because he was beating me, that's not a valid explanation. According to Rabbi Noda Behuda, we can't accept it. We can't accept it not by virtue of the fact they got divorced, because the divorce is not an action that proves anything, but by virtue of the fact that her words have already been applied halakhically with halakhic weight in the sense that she forfeited her ketubah, her divorce payment, basically. Though, so that is such that she's not able to offer an explanation of what she did. However, There is another way around it, he suggests. The other way around it is that before she said this in court, she had had that conversation with a neighbor. And the conversation with the neighbor was where they came up with this idea that she would lie and say she had the affair. So that gets us into another halacha, because we know that if this woman had, instead of saying it to the neighbor, if she had gone to two valid witnesses, meaning the kinds of witnesses who can give any testimony in court, adult men, and she had gone to them and said, listen, I'm about to go to the rabbi and say that I had an affair. I want you to know that I'm only saying it so that the husband will divorce me because he's beating me and I'm afraid for my life. If she had done that, then the witnesses don't even need to know if it's true. Right? They don't have to investigate whether the husband's abusing her or not. Doesn't matter. Since once she tells them that that's what's going on, then her saying it no longer creates the presumption that she's had the affair. Why not? Because she has, before saying it, made clear that she doesn't really mean it and she's not intending it to be true. That would be similar to, the note here points out, if somebody sells a field and they do a full valid sale with witnesses, if they beforehand go to other witnesses and say, listen, I'm selling this because so-and-so is pressuring me into selling it, and I can't resist the pressure anymore, and I can't do anything about it, but I want you to know that I don't really mean the sale. And the reason you would do that is because you're hoping that a time will come when you'll be able to get the field back, and you want to prove that it was sold under coercion. And in many cases in halacha, selling under coercion takes valid effect, if not for the fact the person ahead of time says, I don't really mean to sell it. So if he does that, even if he sold movable property and they're already in the possession of the buyer, and possession often is a great deal of the law, nonetheless, if you can bring these witnesses to court, then a court would take it back from him, even though there are witnesses to the sale. Right? It doesn't matter because there's no contradiction between the two sets of witnesses. The second set of witnesses saying, we witnessed a sale, and the first set is saying, but we know ahead of time that the sale wasn't meant and wasn't intended because he gave a modan. That's why, in many cases in halacha, by the way, before somebody will do something, they'll say, and I nullify all of my modot, and I nullify any prior claims I made, this being done under coercion, gets very complicated because the point of a moda is to help people who are being forced into something they don't want to do have a way out in the future, whereas the people who are then forcing them know that that's a possibility. They'll try to force the person now to say, and I'm nullifying all of those things. So it can go back and forth, and there are all sorts of ways that people try to make sure that they can keep a moda in place. But on the other hand, you don't want somebody, I have a family relative who claims that they were once involved in a sale of a commercial sale of, you know, multi-million dollar deal, and the deal went all the way through, and then at the very bottom end, one of the parties, instead of signing their name, had written, I do not agree. So when the lawyers, after the signing, they had this big signing ceremony and a celebration, and when they wanted to move forward on the deal, the other side says, well, look up the contract and you'll see he signed, I don't agree. So you don't want to have those things happen to you because it's a waste of everybody's time. So here too, I wouldn't want to buy something and then have it turn out 2 years later after I've moved in and I've invested in this. The person comes back and says, oh, I never met the sale, and here are my witnesses that I said ahead of time that I can't. So it goes both ways in a lot. We want to protect those who are being coerced, and this is a way to do it. On the other hand, you don't want to just have everybody be insecure about their transactions and where they happen. All of that is only relevant here, because this woman has spoken to this neighbor ahead of time. So too, the note over here points out that the Taz says that if the woman who was wearing the Bigdei Nidut, if the woman who was wearing the garments that suggest that she's now a Nidah, had told somebody ahead of time that she's doing it for some other reason, the Taz says that's like a Moser Moda. That would be similar to saying ahead of time you don't really mean it and then selling something. So even though in the Nidah case she's talking to her husband, it doesn't matter. If you have a Moda, it all works. That's what he says. And then, if that's true, now, he started until now the Moda, the informing has been to witnesses ahead of time. And that's going to be what's going to help the later claim that it wasn't true. But with witnesses, we also said, they don't need to know that the husband's actually beating her. They would only need to know that she's telling them that she's not going to mean the fact that she had an affair. Right? But in this case, that's not what happened. What happened in this case? In this case, she only told a neighbor. But the note of Yehuda says, it doesn't really matter that it's only a neighbor because we're not talking about money. In money situations, you need two witnesses to establish halachic truth. Right? Al pishnayim edim yakum davar. But in isurim situations, in cases of whether something is prohibited or not, there we only need one witness. As we always say, right, a single witness is okay in isurim. So for example, if I want to know if a certain piece of meat is kosher, I only need somebody to tell me that it's kosher who's trustworthy. But one person. And the note of Yehuda points out that in all those situations where it's only one person, that one person can be a woman as well. Meaning in those areas of believability, women and men are equal in halakha. So therefore, when it comes to this case, which is a case about Isurim. Now there's a small side discussion about whether or not this should be considered a Dava Shebe'erva. Usually a Dava Be'erva, something that has to do with sexuality and sexual relations, things like that, we say requires two for everything, and there's a whole discussion about that I'll skip, because the Notabita's basic conclusion is that this doesn't qualify as a Dava Shebe'erva. It's not that kind of situation. Since it's not that, Nodi Huda says that it's not a Dava Shebe'erva, and therefore, since it's not a Dava Shebe'erva, one witness will be believed, and therefore, we can say that this neighbor can be believed because she's a fully acceptable one witness for all those things that need only one witness. She's fully acceptable, and therefore she can be believed. And therefore, you would think that we would accept this as a moda, not as an explanation after the fact, but that as a prior condition, saying that she did not really have the affair. She didn't mean she had an affair, and she never meant to say it. All that being true, it would sound like then they can get back together. Unfortunately, the Nodavita says, I think there's another reason why I think that he's not allowed to get married to her again, because there is a halacha as well that says that if the husband divorces her, mishum shemra, because of rumors that go around about her that she has not acted appropriately, so the Shulchan Aruch has three opinions about that situation. One says that only if the man says, I'm divorcing her because of the bad rumors about her, and he says it again, that's the only reason, if not, I wouldn't have gotten divorced from her, can he get back together with her? And there are those who say that as soon as he says, if he says that, he can't get back together with her ever. Second opinion says, even if he just says it one time, he can't. And the third opinion then just says, even if he doesn't say it, but we all know it, like it's just well known that there were bad rumors about her, he shouldn't get back together with her. So there's no Rebbe that says, for the Rambam, which is the last opinion, for sure he can't. I mean, in other words, the Rambam held that if a couple breaks up because the husband, because we have reason to believe that it was because the husband heard bad rumors about her conduct during the marriage, they can never get back together. That's not a formal halakhic prohibition in the sense of it's now usher from the Torah because she had an affair. It's a sense of if he has that sense of her, if he had that opinion of her, he should not be able to get back together with her. But then Rebbe says, but it's probably even true for the second opinion, where he says it out loud that he's getting rid of, that he's divorcing her and separating from her because of a shame ra. After all, he came to the Rav worried about her conduct and assuming that she had an affair, saying that he believed that she had an affair. And then when the Rav spoke to her, the Rav told him to divorce her. So that's almost, the Renewed with things, it might even be like the man said it twice, made it very clear that he's doing it because of these rumors about her. And therefore, in this situation, Hakinami says, there's no greater evidence that the reason he was divorcing her was because of her conduct, was that he took the rabbi's ruling saying that he had to divorce her, and that's why he divorced her. So he says, that's not good enough to say the divorce is invalid because it was a mistaken divorce, because we don't do such things, because you need much greater standards before you say the get wasn't valid, but nonetheless, he had a get, and there was they put no conditions on the get, but it's still true, it feels very clear to everybody, that it was because of the conduct he heard about her, and therefore he thinks that this husband cannot return her because of a problem for the husband. That the husband has a rule that if the husband had separated from a woman because he thought her conduct was inappropriate and unacceptable, so when he believed her, that she had the affair, even though we now know that she didn't mean it, and we now know that it's probably not true, his having separated from her out of that belief creates itself a prohibition for him to return and remarry her. That's as far as the Rabbi Yehuda understood, and that's therefore his ruling. So, for all that, it's a tragic situation in a lot of ways. The abuse is a problem, and the woman needed to get away from it is a problem, and they're wanting to get back together is, to me, odd. Nonetheless, the Rabbi Yehuda's discussion gives us insight into several halakhic concepts, the concept of an amatla, and when somebody says something, when they can go back on that thing later and say that they didn't mean it. It seems like if they did an action based on it, they can't, or an action to support that claim, and they not because they were forced to, they can't go back on it. It also seems like, according to the Ravid, if the claim had already had some halakhic impact, then they can't go back on it. That was one concept we came across. And this concept also of moda, of beforehand saying that you didn't mean something you were about to say, and of that being able to prevent that thing from being believed, and that maybe having an effect here, that often being with witnesses, but sometimes only with one, because in Isurim, in ordinary in matters of Isur V'Heter, prohibition, only one is good enough. That might have been enough to say here that she hadn't really had the affair. But closing with the final idea of that if a husband divorces his wife because of things he has come to believe about her, and those things have to do with her sexual morality, that might create for him a prohibition ever to get back together with her, which is where the Rabbi Yehuda ends the discussion and where we will end the discussion. And this is a response of the day for the 13th of Sivan.